Welcome to Torah Imecha, Nach Yomi with the OU Women's Initiative. This is Amy Horowitz, and today we're studying Yeshayahu Perek Lamed Tet. Perek Lamed Tet tells the final chapter of Chizkiyahu's story, after he's recovered from his illness and been saved from an invasion by Assyria. This perek also has a parallel in Sefer Melachim, and all the events of Chizkiyahu's reign are reviewed again in Divrei Hayamim. Our perek begins by telling us that Merodach Baladan, king of Bavel, hears about Chizkiyahu's illness and recovery and sends him a letter and a gift. We haven't really heard about Bavel yet, although they'll soon come to power and ultimately be the ones to destroy our first Beit HaMikdash. Until now, though, the major powers in the region have been Aram and Ashur, Assyria, with Egypt getting an honorable mention here and there. What happens to bring Bavel into the picture now? Abarbanel explains that although Assyria was the ruling power and controlled almost the entire region, the Assyrian Empire was comprised of many smaller vassal states, which were each ruled by their own king, who had some limited power over his state, but ultimately that king answered to the Assyrian king. At this time, Bavel was one of those vassal states. According to Abarbanel, Bavel hated, or at least resented, Sancheriv for limiting their autonomy. When Merodach Baladan hears that Assyria tried and failed to conquer Malchut Yehuda, he's happy to hear of Assyria's failure and interested in Malchut Yehuda's success. Maybe this is a case of the enemy of your enemy is your friend. Malbim, however, explains that as part of the Assyrian Empire, Bavel was actually an ally of Sancheriv, and therefore Merodach Baladan sends his envoy with gifts for Chizkiyahu in order to gain entry into the territory of Yehuda and spy on the Jewish kingdom for his friend Assyria. The Psukim in Divrei Hayamim add another dimension to this visit. It seems that Merodach Baladan sends his envoy to Yerushalayim because he wants to investigate the unusual miracle that Hashem performed as a sign for Chizkiyahu, moving the sun backwards 10 clicks on the sundial and lengthening that one day by 10 hours. Of course, when God turned back the clock, it didn't only affect Chizkiyahu and the people in Yerushalayim, but it affected the whole world. The Midrash explains that Merodach Baladan woke up from his afternoon nap that day in Bavel, realized it was morning, and assumed that he'd slept for an entire afternoon and night. When he got angry with his servants for not waking him up and causing him to lose an entire day, they explained to him that instead of progressing forward, the sun had moved backward, and he hadn't lost any time at all, but he had even gained a few hours while he slept. Merodach Baladan now wants to see what makes the Jewish people so special that God would perform this supernatural spectacle on their behalf. Vaismach aleihem Chizkiyahu. Chizkiyahu is happy to receive this diplomatic delegation. Malbim suggests that he's excited to brag about the miracles that happened for him, both the recovery from his illness and the miracle of the sun. Instead of giving credit to Hashem's love of Yerushalayim and the kingdom of Yehuda, Chizkiyahu will happily credit himself as being the reason for God's beneficence. Ultimately, this boastfulness will be the downfall of his kingdom. Merodach Baladan's officers will report back to their king that the miracle of the sun was all about Chizkiyahu and God's love for him. The Jewish nation isn't anything so special after all. If so, the Jewish people are vulnerable to attack just like any other conquest, and so all Bavel has to do is wait for Chizkiyahu's life to run its course, and the territory of Malchut Yehuda will be theirs to conquer. The miracle of the sun isn't the only thing Chizkiyahu boasts about. Pasuk Bet describes how Chizkiyahu is eager to show the Babylonians his great wealth, his silver, his gold, his rare spices and fragrances. The Pasuk tells us, Lo haya davar asher lo heram Chizkiyahu beveito uvechol memshalto. He shows them everything he has. He leaves nothing out. He's excessively proud of what he believes demonstrates his power and success. After the Babylonian envoy leaves the palace, Yeshayahu arrives to speak to Chizkiyahu, and he immediately begins questioning the king about the men who had visited. Ma amruha anashim ha'ela, ume'ayin yavohu elecha. Where were they from? What did they say? Chizkiyahu answers, Me'eretz rechoka ba'u elai mi'bavel. They came from a faraway land. Rashi suggests that this is part of the pattern of Chizkiyahu's arrogance. Of course, Yeshayahu knows who these men are and where they've come from. He's a Nevi. His questions, therefore, are rhetorical, just like Hashem's own question to Cain in Sefer Breishit, Ei Hevel Achicha, where's your brother Hevel? Of course, Hashem knows the answer to the question, and so he asks it rhetorically to make a point. This is Yeshayahu's tactic here, and Chizkiyahu misses it. Instead of hearing the implicit rebuke in Yeshayahu's questions, he assumes Yeshayahu is ignorant, and so he proceeds to answer the Navi's questions literally. So Yeshayahu tries again. Vayomer, ma ra'u bebeitecha? What did they see in your house? And Chizkiyahu responds honestly, perhaps still missing the implied criticism. Et kol asher beveti ra'u lo haya davar asher lo hiritim be'otrotai. I showed them everything in my house. There's no treasure or valuable that I didn't show them. Malbim's interpretation is kinder than Rashi's. He doesn't view Chizkiyahu's responses as a display of arrogance, but rather as a display of ignorance. He's not thinking about Bavel as a possible enemy. These men came from an Eretz Rechoka, says Chizkiyahu, a faraway land that has nothing to do with us here in Israel. In other words, what's the harm in showing some exotic travelers the glory of my palace and my kingdom? Yishayahu will have to spell it out for Chizkiyahu, which is what he does in the next psukim. Hine yamim ba'im v'nisa kol asher beveitecha v'asher atru avotecha ad hayom hazeh bavel, lo yivater davar, amar Hashem. A time is coming when everything in your palace, which your ancestors have stored up to this day, will be carried off to Bavel. Nothing will be left behind, said Hashem. This was a very bad idea, says Yeshayahu. You just basically handed Bavel the keys to your kingdom. In your arrogance, you thought that these visitors were just interested in you, but you didn't even consider for one moment that they might have a sinister agenda. Once again, Chizkiyahu's boastfulness will be the downfall of his kingdom. In addition to arrogance, Chizkiyahu has violated one of the basic prohibitions of being a Jewish king. Among other limitations mentioned in Sefer Devarim, V'kesef v'zahav lo yarbel lo ma'od, a king is required to limit his gold and silver, to not get carried away by amassing great wealth. Rashi points out that this punishment is mida keneged mida. Chizkiyahu said, lo haya davar, there's nothing I didn't show off. And Hashem says, lo yivater davar, then nothing will remain. In addition to the Babylonians ransacking the wealth of Malchut Yehuda, Yishayahu prophesizes, umibanecha asher yatsu mimcha asher tolid yakhu v'hayu sarisim v'heichal melech bavel. And some of your sons, your own issue, whom you have fathered, will be taken to serve as eunuchs in the palace of the king of Bavel. And of course, all of Yeshayahu's words will come to pass. Bavel will indeed ransack Yerushalayim, destroying our Beit HaMikdash, looting the palace, and taking Bnei Yisrael's treasures back to Bavel with them as they lead the Jewish people into exile. Chizkiyahu's response to this nevuah is perplexing. Vayomer Chizkiyahu el Yeshayahu, Tov devar Hashem asher dibarta, Vayomer ki yihyeh shalom ve'emet beyamai. Chizkiyahu declares to Yeshayahu, the word of Hashem that you've spoken is good, because he thought it means that safety is assured for my time. All he seems to hear, all he seems to focus on, is the fact that Yeshayahu is predicting a punishment that will happen in the future. Yamim ba'im, says Yeshayahu, the time will come. And Chizkiyahu hears, okay, fine, but not yet. Yeshayahu tells Chizkiyahu that his sons will be taken into the Babylonian king's service, and Chizkiyahu hears, okay, fine, but not me. How can he be so self-centered, so unconcerned with what will happen to his own children, to the next generation of Malchut Yehuda? How can he hear this terrible prophecy and respond, Tov Devar Hashem, sounds great. Abarbanel suggests that Chizkiyahu is relieved that this punishment won't happen in his time for several reasons. First, it would be painful for him to witness the destruction of the kingdom that he loves so much. This is similar to Moshe Rabbeinu's reaction in Sefer Bamidbar, when Hashem shows him the punishment Bnei Yisrael will receive for their complaints. Moshe says, Hargeni naharogi matzati chen be'enecha, ve'al ere bera'ati. If this is the punishment you have in store for them, then I'd rather you just kill me now so that I don't have to see it. Esther Hamalka echoes this sentiment when she pleads with Achashverosh to revoke Haman's decree against the Jews. She says, Ki echecha uchal ve'ra'iti bera'a asher yimtza et ami. For how can I bear to see the disaster which will befall my people? In addition to not wanting to see or witness the downfall of his kingdom with his own eyes, Chizkiyahu is relieved that the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash won't happen in his time on his watch. While these explanations do make us feel slightly better about Chizkiyahu's reaction to the news of Yehuda's eventual punishment, they're still reasonably selfish. Perhaps knowing that he has 15 more years to live, he hears in Yeshayahu's nevuah the silver lining fact that this punishment won't happen for at least 15 more years. He's not happy about the fact that his children and people will ultimately suffer, but he is happy that they have at least 15 more years of peace ahead. Malbim explains that Chizkiyahu hopes that in the 15-plus years of peace that lie ahead, the Jewish people will work hard to find favor in the eyes of Hashem, enough so that he'll rescind this punishment. This is based on the well-known principle that a positive nevuah will always come to pass, while a negative nevuah can be changed with teshuva and ma'asim tovim. With this explanation in mind, our perek ends on this hopeful note. Although Chizkiyahu has made his share of mistakes, He's optimistic that in the years that follow, he'll be able to lead his people in righteousness towards the hope of a better future. Thank you for studying together, Li'ilui Nishmat, Malka Esther Batzvi Yosef.